Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to Breakfast with the Gators, our first real show after the Gators' 55-0 win last night over the LIU Sharks. And I just want to mention, we are a proud member of the Stadium & Gale Network. So thank you again to those guys as we kind of really kick off what our show is all about, and that is bringing you an audio version of what Breakfast with the Gators was all about when we were growing up. I'm Jackson Raymer, your host, alongside Sam Graveland, Hunter Bedard, and Devin Connell, along with our producer, Jake Lovelace, who is going to be popping in and out tonight, as we are missing Will Norris, who is in London, not really standing by his black flag mentality approach to game days and missed the season opener.
Yeah, I heard he moved out there to start a Premier League podcast.
Had to have been
a footy guy
league this week, right?
Doing a tea and crumpets in the morning podcast with Will Norris.
Yeah, well, the three of us, Hunter, myself, and Devin, were in attendance last night at the season opener. Sam, I know you were watching out in Arizona. Jake, he was down in St. Pete, Tampa area watching. So just an all-around good victory for the Gators.
It's always great to get back into the swamp, man. You know, we said it last week, you only get six of them a year. So anytime you walk through the gates, might be a 30-minute wait to get through the gates, but you walk through the gates and see the field for the first time all painted up. It's great to be back in the swamp, man. And it was great to be back in the swamp last night.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I joke, I'm usually one of those people that kind of rolls in right before kickoff, always making kickoff on time, but never too early. I like to sit down and look up and be ready to play. Today, I found myself in there an hour 15 early just to take it all in. I just did a couple laps around the stadium, grabbed one of the free programs, looking through that, went and sat by my seat just kind of by myself for a while, just taking it all in. You get chills, man. You forget how much you miss it until you're there, and it was awesome being back in the swamp tonight.
Yeah, it's tough for reality to set in, right? We've been watching college football last week with week zero, Thursday night, and Friday night we had some games, and I got out to the tailgate spot at 9:30 this morning, but it really does not hit you until you walk through the gates and see that field painted, the fans, the alumni section packed in there. I got in about 40 minutes before kickoff, which is about usual, a little bit later than I would like for the season opener. But I thought the crowd was great. Ahmad Black, shout out former James Bates student, classmate of Sam and I's in that play-by-play class. So for him to do two bits, he was perfect. I thought he was great. He did everything. The mannerisms were correct. I thought he had a lot of energy, especially for a crowd. You play an LIU team who's arguably the worst team to ever come into the swamp and get everybody riled up, fired up for the Gators season opener. What were your guys' thoughts on Ahmad Black coming back to the swamp?
Stadium & Gale alumnus. It's great to have him back in the swamp, man. It's, you get a legend in the flesh back around the team. I mean, it's just like all the former players that came during camp. You love seeing guys that wore the orange and blue that are legends in the orange and blue. Whenever they can come back and get the honor of being Mr. Two-Bits, man, it's great to see those guys in the swamp.
Yeah, absolutely. It was cool whenever he finished doing the Two-Bits. He came down towards the tunnel where the players run out, and he was down there when they were running out. Obviously, ran out with them, but you could see him dapping a few guys up and saying, hey. He brought a cool energy, so that was really fun to see.
What were your guys' thoughts? We had a new voiceover on the What Makes Us Rise video introduction. Is a little bit slower, not as energetic, especially when they got, we woke up in shrines, not bedrooms. And then the Gator video they play on the board when the Gators are in the tunnel right before they come out. They've made some adjustments the last few years, and I can't say they're for the greater good. You know, what were your initial thoughts seeing that?
Dude, the sound is the one thing that I hope and pray Scott Strickland gets right with this renovation in the end zone section E. you can't hardly hear the pregame introduction video at all. Even for a game like this, where it's not, you know, buzzing like it's going to be for Texas or FSU or Tennessee later this year. That's one of the things, you know, on top of not reducing the capacity, that hopefully they get fixed whenever the Swamp does get its facelift here in a couple of years.
Yeah, definitely jealous you guys were there. Sorry, this was some technical difficulties, but we're back. Definitely jealous you guys were in the Swamp. Missed it for sure. It was good to watch the boys on TV again, though. Just curious what it was like being there. Obviously, when you guys were heading to the stadium today, you probably knew what the result was going to be, but did it still kind of have a good feeling, like atmosphere-wise, kind of a bigger game than LIU just because of the anticipation for the season? You know, it can't compare to other Billy openers, obviously, night game Utah, last year Miami, so much hype for those games, but did it still feel kind of like a bigger game? You know, were people still like jacked up to be there?
Definitely, yeah, definitely. There was that opening game buzz for sure. I think no matter the opponent, you're going to get that opening game buzz. People crave college football, and Gator fans obviously were itching to get back in there. And so, it's an opponent where you know that you are going to win. You still have that buzz. You still felt that energy. I would say the difference is as the game gets going and once people are settled into it, there's not as much tension, right? You're not on the edge of your seat every third down, hoping it goes your way, knowing that it could change the outcome of the game. But when it comes to opening kick and the lead up going into the stadium, it definitely had that buzz.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you there, Devin. Let's jump into our first segment, which we'll do a quick rapid fire recap. We'll go quarter by quarter. Sam, watching from your living room in Arizona, first thoughts, I mean, LIU gets a first down. They don't get another first down for almost 3.5 quarters. I mean, come on. We start the season off with a scoop and score. What's your reaction there in Arizona?
Yeah, I mean, watching the TV, well, I did not – obviously, I didn't really scout LIU too much in terms of scheme, so I wasn't really expecting triple options. So the first two couple plays caught me off guard, and I was like, oh, boy, you know, we better buckle up maybe this first drive at least, and then you can adjust. But then they were going to rotate like three quarterbacks, and then they ran a new guy in for the play. He made a couple moves, and then the ball's on the floor and bounces right into Bryce Thornton, and he's off to the races. No one's there. Great way to start the season, but definitely if you were still grabbing, you know, a drink or something last night before the game, you weren't settled. You missed it.
How about Jaden Robinson? Of all the linebackers that we talked about all offseason, the first guy to make the big play to force a fumble out of that linebacker room, it's Jaden Robinson. And that's not even to say that, you know, Miles Grant was great. He filled gaps. He played well. But the first big play of the season from the linebacker core came from Jaden Robinson, of all people.
But a lot of people inside the program hearing talk throughout the offseason, fall camp, he's kind of been overshadowed in that group a little bit with the younger guys that we brought in the 2024 class. Jaden Robinson's been the leader and arguably our best linebacker. So it's good for him to make that big play, get a big momentum boost, get the crowd into it early. Like Hunter mentioned earlier, if you're playing LIU, you get the opponent, but it's still a season opener. So to get the crowd involved was fantastic that early in the game. And, you know, the highlight of the show, first half, first quarter, Jaden Ball, 4 carries, 44 yards, and a touchdown on his first drive. Hunter, I mean, this guy, we talked about in the preseason show, we arguably got one of the best 1-2, maybe 3-headed, you know, horse running back rooms, and not just the league, but the country. What did you see out of Jaden Ball tonight?
You backed up that hot take of mine right off the bat. I know it's LIU. I understand that. He's different. He moves different. He just does. And I don't mean this disrespectfully to Jacoby Jackson because I'm really excited about him. I think he's going to be a great player. But I saw a lot of people this offseason talk about 1A, 1B. I saw that a few times in different articles. Again, no disrespect to Jacoby Jackson. Jaden Ball is the one. Jaden Ball is the running back that is going to lead that group. Well, there's going to be other guys that contribute. He just moves different. His contact balance is crazy. We saw it last year many times, but there were multiple runs tonight where it doesn't matter if you're playing LIU or if you're playing LSU. the contact balance of his ability to, you know, stick a hand down and keep himself up and get a few more yards is ridiculous. So I'm just even more excited to watch him the rest of the season after watching him tonight.
In person, yeah, he looked lean and he looked fast.
Yeah,
even more so than last year.
The burst from the line of scrimmage, I thought, was obviously, like you said, the opponent's LIU, but you're looking for intangibles and stuff, and his burst looked significantly better. And like you said, it was always the 1-2 punch with him and Jackson. And Jackson didn't have a great game, had a couple good carries, had some good cutbacks, did have the fumble. We ended up, you know, falling on it and we didn't lose it. But yeah, if he's Jaden Ball, might be just the one. And if you got a bell cow, you got to feed him the rock.
Well, one of the low lights of the first quarter, Sam, as a former Key West high school kicker yourself, our senior Trace Mack starts the game with a 40-yard missed field goal, ends up going 2 for 5. We'll dive into this a little bit later, but man, our senior veteran on that side of the ball, what's going on through a kicker's mind at this moment?
Weird game for Smack to miss some shorter ones and then make the 56-yarder and then miss another long one. I'm not too sure. I mean, he has obviously a great leg. It's always been accuracy for him. The one that he missed was, you'd like to be on the opposite hash of which leg you kick from. Makes it a little bit easier. That was the 56-yarder he made to really follow through. The first one he pulled. You just kind of got to – luckily it's against LIU, right? You know, hopefully he can get it out of the way. He only missed 3 field goals all of last year, missed 3 tonight. So definitely if there was a bad that you can take away from tonight, unfortunately it was Trey Smack. He's probably going to put in some extra kicks on Monday and Tuesday, that's for sure.
Moving into the second quarter, talking about some of the lowlights and what can be improved – we talked last week, and it's been the talk of the town for 9 months now. It's DJ Lagway, not seen a live rush since the Tulane Bowl game. Hasn't been a participant in any of the scrimmages, was not participant in the spring game. Really didn't start doing 11-on-11 live reps until about a week and a half ago. Devin, you're in the stadium. We see a crossing route, the VB3, the entire stadium season wide open. A few other plays in that second quarter, he just – didn't look like DJ Lagway himself. What are your thoughts on Lagway and, you know, the rust he's got to shake off?
Yeah, I thought that you could definitely tell that there was some rust there. You said he didn't play 11-on-11 football from Tulane up until a week and a half ago, and it looked like it through the first quarter and a half. I was really pleased with kind of how he bounced back from missing VB3 on that crossing route to the very next drive. Me and Hunter were sitting next to each other. We commented on it. The exact same throw, was a little bit behind him, but at least it was catchable the second time he threw it. So you could kind of see the progress in game. And in a game like this, that's what you're looking for, right? You're looking for the incremental improvements as the game goes along. And I think that DJ settled in. He's 15 for 18 for 120 yards today. Efficient. Hate to see him miss that one throw, but as the whole half went and as you got closer to halftime, I thought you saw some of that rust get knocked off and was pleased with the way that he progressed as the game went on. And one more point, I guess, before I'll open it up to Hunter and Sam, but the play calling, man, you forget about it when you're talking about DJ Lagway's talent all off season, but golly, when you're watching a bubble screen and you're wanting your quarterback to get reps and it's behind the line of scrimmage on 3rd and 8, those are those types of reps that when it comes time to play in Death Valley, when it comes time for Texas to come to town, you wish that you just worked more of these downfield reps in a game like this, especially while Lagway's trying to get the rust knocked off of him. So that was my criticism and critique, but I was happy with the way that that DJ came back towards the end of the second quarter and really started to settle in and look more sharp and crisp.
Yeah, I thought we saw Lagway knock off that rust. We'll get to the play calling here in a little bit. I believe we've got a caller that has that question for us later on in the show. But some nice touchdown passes out of Lagway in the red zone in that second quarter, that first half. I believe his first one was Eugene Wilson on a little corner route, out route to the right side of the end zone. Big time throw. He found Hayden Hansen as well. I thought it was a really nice move out to his right on the run, a tight laser. And then obviously Sam's guy, J. Mike, in the back of the end zone.
That was clean.
It was. I thought he woke up a little bit.
On both parties.
Yeah. Hunter, what was your perspective inside the stadium? You know, we heard some comments around the fans around us. What was the chatter like in your section, and maybe him getting a little loose there and comfortable back late in that first half?
Yeah, and even going back before that, I think it's kind of cool insight. Devin was kind enough to lend me a ticket tonight, and I sat in his seats. Him and his family have been in for years, and they're right by the tunnel where the players run out. And so, like I said, I was in there pretty early, about 40 minutes before kickoff when they first came out to warm up. It was really cool to see DJ's leadership skills in action. You know, obviously it's been a while since we've seen them all play football, and so to watch him greet every single player come out to warm up, hyping them up. He had so much energy right off the rip. You could tell he was just itching to get out there. I mean, we talk so much about how long it's been since he's taken 11 on 11 reps. I'm sure the dude that grew up playing football and loves the game, you know, more than all of us is itching to do it too. And so you could see that energy. You could see him just hopping around. And so that was really cool. And then I think Devin hit on everything. It really was – it looked like someone that hadn't played 11 on 11 in 9 months to start, and then you could watch the rust come off in real time. I saw someone tweet that, and I thought they hit the nail on the head. But I was really, really pleased with how he ended the half.
For sure, Rusty, and I think you saw that, like, the first play called a – dialed up a play on our first one, which I was surprised we didn't just run the ball. And he tries to, you know, he's kind of scrambling, makes one guy miss. He's like, all right, I can do this. And then he takes a sack, and it's like, all right, come on. So he definitely rusty right off the bat. And then Raymer kind of touched on it, really sharp, like inside the 15 in those kind of shorter situations. All of his touchdown passes were really good passes, really good like out of empty set formations, which I was nice to see Billy do some of that. I noticed both of the touchdowns that were out of the empty set and goal-to-goal situations were on third down. Just why don't you do it on first down? Just a suggestion. But, yeah, he makes some really good throws in those situations. And like you said, Hunter, you could just see the rust come off in real time, which was good to see. But, yeah, you know, a little expected. And to the point, the screens, get rid of it.
And another thing, too, it's kind of interesting that he was so effective in the red zone, because you would think that the compressed field and really what he struggled with mostly last year was the intermediate type of passing concepts. The fact that the red zone was where we seemed to be at our sharpest, especially there towards the end of the first half, that was it's encouraging to see that rust didn't really he was able to shake off that rust in the red zone on third downs in high leverage type plays.
Yeah, and what he does best is throw the deep ball, as we all know, right? And late in that second quarter, the deep ball to Vernell Brown, I mean, to the freshman. I think he was on the move, stepping up towards the line of scrimmage, just throws a dart down the VB3, who makes this incredible one-hand grab. I mean, the kid's sensational, right? We mentioned him on the first episode of the pod that he's going to be a difference maker for this team. He showed that in the return game with some flashes in the punt return. I believe he led the team with 4 catches for 78 yards, 36 or 40 on that big play.
Only 3 catches.
3 catches for 78 yards. I mean, guys, we haven't had a freshman receiver like this in a long time that we were able to, you know, we've got some really good elite transfers in the years prior, Billy and his offense, but for him to bring in a guy like this who's been overshadowed by Dallas Wilson. Dallas Wilson's out tonight with a foot injury. VB3 comes out and makes a name for himself. Hunter, I mean, what was your viewpoint of that catch?
So we were, like I said, south end zone, correct, Dev? South end zone, right, yeah, where the gears run out of the tunnel, and so we were right there when it happened. Honestly, just in awe. I've watched the replay a bunch of times by now. I don't want to say stumbled, but, you know, he saw the ball was maybe a little over his head, so he kind of did a little bit of a stumble. I thought he had no chance to catch it, to be honest. I thought it was an overthrow live. So we were all just amazed he came down with it. So that was exciting to see. And you mentioned Jackson, the burst and the punt return game. That's what had me the most excited. And don't get me wrong, him as a receiver was fun to watch, but his burst and the punt return game is going to be really exciting to watch. I think that's something where you talk about the opponent being LIU. I mean, that translates, right? That's the intangible Sam's talking about. So I'm really excited about that.
He moved different.
The catch was unreal. Like you said, he must have stumbled because he had to backpedal for almost 10 yards, it seemed like. And if he was running forward, he's probably in the end zone, but we don't get that highlight reel. But to your point, Jackson, having a freshman receiver like that, third receiver in program history to start first on the opener as a freshman, Percy Harvin, Antonio Callaway, pretty good company. They also returned punts too. Kind of interesting there. I said it to you guys, and it's not like a slight to him, but he reminds me of Kadarius Toney, but he actually grew up as a wide receiver, Vernell Brown did. And that's really enticing. Like the way he moves is super exciting. He already seems very polished, and the burst, like you said, both receiving and in the punt return game. I like Raymer's take last week's episode to, you know, maybe crib a couple returns this year.
Yeah, he's certainly headed in the right direction there. Gators led 38-0 at halftime. DJ Lagway does not play in the second half. I don't think that's really a shock to anybody. I think if he looked a little bit more crisp, he only plays a quarter. I don't know if the full game plan was to play a half, but due to some of that rust, he did get to play.
I thought it wound up being necessary. I was happy with him playing the whole first half. Like
I agree.
Likewise.
He needed to work through some things, so I was okay with him playing all the way.
After the first few drives, I thought he might get a couple drives in the third quarter the way it was going, you know, but it got right.
It got polished up. We got to see the freshman Tramella Jones take the range the first time. That's been a huge quarterback two competition all throughout summer and then the fall camp. We believe Aiden Warner kind of had that edge with him getting that start last year against Texas, being the backup last year to DJ Lagway once Graham Mertz went down. But I think Tramell Jones cemented himself as quarterback two tonight. What were your thoughts when he took over the reins? Devin, you know, he's a Mandarin guy. He's from Duval County, where I believe most of this podcast is happy to bring a guy in from a program like Mandarin in this great city of Jacksonville to the Gators. And, you know, he didn't shy away from the bright lights.
Duval. Yeah, he played well, man. I think that it's going to be interesting to see, and hopefully we don't have to find out. It'll be interesting to see if Billy wanted to get him game reps, an entire half worth of game reps against a team like LIU. If the worst were to happen in Baton Rouge or later in the season against a team that's not LIU, it'll be interesting to see if Tramell Jones is the first one coming off the bench in that situation. You got to think Aiden Warner's played in you know, a Florida Georgia game. He's played against Texas. It wasn't necessarily a great experience, but he has the experience. Harrison Bailey's our age, so you got two quarterbacks that have game experience. So getting Tramell Jones on the field, getting him some reps, an entire half worth of reps to settle into a game, I think that was smart by Billy to get him those types of reps just to see what he does when the lights come on. Because you don't know. I mean, and getting him that opportunity in a game like this, I think will be beneficial to him, even if he's not necessarily QB2 going into Baton Rouge.
I think thought he was sharp. Yeah, I was going to say, I think to that point, Devin, I agree with you. I think when he first started that second half, it wasn't necessarily, oh, this is QB2, that's why he's the second one out here. That might sound dumb on the surface, but I think if it was in question before the second half, it may not be in question after. Again, I know it's LIU, but the word that comes to mind for me after watching him is poise. He's 18 years old, guys. He's 18 years old. It's his first college game. He's in the swamp, and he looked poised. And the ball was zipping out of his hand. He's very mobile and quick, and I was really impressed with what I saw. So I would expect him to be QB2 going forward. But I see your point, Devin. I understand what you mean.
I'm glad you mentioned the zip, because don't necessarily quote me on it, but the broadcast was mentioning something about like his spin rate and it being like very similar to like an MLB pitcher in percentage, which is rare for a quarterback. So he can zip it, and I think the touchdown pass was a nice touch pass. So he can make all the throws, like you said, very poised, can run it. I was very impressed with Tremel, and would feel significantly better if number two, if something were to happen.
And he also brings a little bit of versatility to his legs. He was able to get a lot. Obviously, we're playing a lot of different third and fourth string offensive line once Tremel Jones is in that game. Kind of getting some depth pieces coordinated in a preseason game like this. But I thought Tremel's legs were a difference maker. He missed, I think his first game of his senior year last year at Mandarin, he broke his foot or something in his ankle. So he was out a majority or all of his senior season. So for him to come back, get on campus early, go through our whole offseason program, earn that quarterback two spot, get out here today, the first quarterback after Lagway. I think he brings something Aiden Warner doesn't, say something does happen to Lagway. His legs and his mobility will play a difference.
It's similar enough to Lagway's skill set that Billy wouldn't have to change a whole lot. Obviously, like, it's not the same player, but like you said, he has the mobility. He can make throws. You don't have to change your whole offense around.
And that's a really good point, Sam, because you think about what we had to become when Warner came in against Georgia, when he was playing against Texas. Is a totally different offense. You're not building anything off of what you've done all season when you're throwing Aiden Warner in there. No disrespect to the kid, but it's just a totally different skill set from what, you know, DJ, his style of play is. Sorry, go ahead, Hunter.
I was just going to say, he had some drops too. The receivers didn't necessarily help him out. There were a couple throws that come to mind. There was one to Livingston that seemed
really
like he made a little bit. Yeah, he could have made a little bit more of an effort, you know, touch his hands.
He had to stretch the arms a little bit, but yeah, it was a nice throw right over a linebacker's arms.
Perfect. Yeah, it was real nice. And then there was a deep route. I forget who it was. Was it Wade, maybe? It was a deep route that he placed in a bucket that was not caught. It was a good play by the defensive back as well. But, yeah, just speaking to all of that, he was fun to watch.
Yeah, so Gators end up with the Terrell Jones touchdown pass, the Spirito, the end the game. I'm glad Billy allowed them to go down there and score. You know, these guys, I was listening to Billy post-game, these guys work their tails off, get beat up a lot in practice. So for them to go have the opportunity to go score in the Swamp is just a lifelong memory. You know, this game is not guaranteed. So I'm happy Billy allowed them with the chance to score, and they capitalized. So good for them. Jump into our next segment, player of the game. Hunter, who would you say stood out the most? You had the most impact for the Gators tonight or last night in the 55-0 win?
I think it's got to be VB3, even though he didn't score. It might be, you know, because he didn't get in the end zone, it's harder to say it. And I know, you know, Sam mentioned he only had a few catches, but the OBJ type catch was obviously electrifying. The punt returns, him stepping up as a freshman, first game in the Swamp, to make plays like that. I mean, we'll always now remember that catch he had. And so for me, it's VB3.
Sam, who would you nominate as player of the game?
It's a good nominee. I'll stay on that side of the ball. I'll go Jaden Baugh, just because, like we already mentioned, he looked pretty – he just looks the part. Had, I want to say, maybe four runs of at least 15-plus yards. Finished averaging 11.5 yards per carry. He's, like we've talked about, the 1-2 punch, but we might just have a one. So, Jaden Baugh, player of the game.
We're Gator fans, so we're always biased to the offensive players, but we got to give a little bit of love to some of the defensive guys. I mean, 83 total yards given up, just pitching a shutout for the first time since 2019, I believe. Bryce Thornton, two fumble recoveries, including a touchdown. Jaden Robinson, like we said earlier, the forced fumble. Really impressed with how he looked. There's a couple of plays, I think it was in the second quarter in a row, where Teddy Foster looked good in coverage, came up, put his nose in there, got a good tackle. Another guy that caught my eye, and we talked about him a little bit on the preview pod, Lagonza Hayward. I don't remember him specifically making any plays, but running on the field on special teams when he's out there in the secondary, that kid is a grown man. He looks the part. He has that Caleb Downs body type, which, you know, he's a five-star safety. You kind of expect guys to come in looking like that nowadays. But I was taken aback and looking through the free program to see number two, who he was when I saw him running, because he was he looked the part. He looked good out there. So a couple of defensive guys get some love.
Yeah, I'm going to give the entire nod to the defensive unit, the vacuum cleaner at safety, Thornton jumping on the football. Cam James, I thought, played really well. He actually, I think, caused that fumble on that pitch play to the outside that Thornton jumped on around the 10-15-yard line towards the south side of the end zone. Jaden Woods, there's a bull rush, I believe, in the second quarter, midway through the second quarter.
6-10 left in the second quarter.
Yeah, I know the quarterback got the throw off well in time, but Jaden Woods is a freshman, showed the strength that he possesses, and he's going to be I think left tackles are going to fear for him.
If your name was Jaden and you were wearing orange and blue, you had a pretty good game.
If you're watching this
podcast, Jaden Robinson, Jaden Woods.
Yes. If you're watching this podcast, I know you're going to go back and watch that game at some point because you're a sicko just like we are. Go to the 6-10 mark of the second quarter and watch Jaden Woods. It was unbelievable.
I mean, Jaden Robinson being the leader of that linebacking group, we saw some young guys. Miles Graham played great. I thought he was a missile in some of his run stops. Miles Johnson, he came a freshman, came in, made some big plays in the second half, number 44. So all around, that defensive unit was fantastic. I don't know the last time we've held a team under 100 yards. I'm going to say Missouri 2014, despite us getting blown out by 27 points that game, which makes no sense saying that stat. But I believe that might be the last time we've held an opponent under 100 yards. Don't quote me on that, but that is my best guess. And I believe, talking to Nick Della Torre tonight, that was our first time since 1980 that our offense had not touched the ball and our defense scored the first touchdown of the entire season. I know in 2008, Brandon James housed a punt against Hawaii, but that was special teams. So all around a really, really strong night. I understand the opponent, not the best. Their sideline was very thin. Their scheme, they certainly did not want to throw the football against the Gators. I really feel bad for the quarterback who had 20-25 rushes. I'm sure tomorrow morning he's going to wish his parents stranded him away from the game of football because he got beaten up all night.
You know, another thing, Jackson, that stuck out to Hunter and I when we were watching was, especially in the first half, just how many defensive linemen were rotating in and out early, too. I actually think Makai Boyrow started at defensive tackle.
I'm sure he did.
So that's an interesting development. Just getting all those reps in. I saw Kofi Asari get some snaps in the first half.
Baylor transfer, I thought he looked really good in the first half as well.
He blew up a double team early.
So we had we got a lot of guys that got some good reps in. And the fact that you were able to put in all those different bodies in a game and not have that drop off, like we've seen plenty of times over the last several years, that when those second, third team guys come in, obviously the opponents that we play usually aren't as bad as Long Island. Even the cupcake games that we play aren't as bad as Long Island. But I was really impressed with the standard being upheld no matter who it was in the game, because, you know, they were rotating guys in, going deep into the bench midway through the second quarter.
And, guys, we've talked a lot about the good that occurred and a little bit of the bad with Trace Mack and DJ Lagway shaking off some of his rust. What else did you guys notice? I think it was late first half, Devin Moore, I think back-to-back run plays where the running back kind of kicked it to the outside. Two really bad angles. I mean, we talk highly about Devin Moore, especially him in coverage. He fails to stay healthy. That's the knock on him. But tonight I think he was kind of the weak link defensively in the run game.
Yeah, but I'm okay with Devin Moore shying away from contact. I think that he's most valuable in coverage, glass molds, paper skin sometimes if he tries to come up and tackle. So I'm okay with, especially against LIU, if he's not taking the best angles in run pursuit, I'll take him out wide, covering receivers instead.
Thankfully, it feels like we have enough corners to rotate around. And if that's an issue for him, like Devin said, if you just only need to play him in coverage situations, put him out there, you know, third and longs, second and longs, try to avoid putting him in run stop situations.
Yeah, I think I mentioned in the group chat at one point, it is tough to evaluate the defensive back group in a game like this where they hardly threw the ball, right? There's only really a handful of plays you can look at to talk about, you know, their skills and coverage. Now, tackling is still part of the game, so it's definitely something to bring up, but it's not too much of a concern. If we're four or five games in and Devin Moore each game seems like can't make a tackle or takes a wrong angle, then we'll certainly revisit.
Sam, were there a lot of missed tackles? It didn't seem live like there was like that was an issue for a majority of the game.
No, I mean, like, with the exception, I don't even think there was any, like, on the first two plays. I just think they caught us off guard and they'd had a couple decent runs. No, it didn't really seem like that. And it seemed like people were swarming and people were getting into the backfield. No, if you mentioned it, it didn't really feel like missed tackles was an issue at all.
That's a good sign.
Yeah, really all around good performance offensively by the Gators. And we'll jump into our first fan segment. We got a caller from Forrest. Let's get him in on the voicemail, see what message he provides for breakfast for the
Forrest
Gators.
Forrest Timmers calling in from Lake Butler, Florida. What's your thoughts on the offense tonight?
Well, guys, I think we've hashed out what we saw, but were you – it's LIU. You don't want to show a whole lot on film, you know, but it's Billy Napier. He's been here for now 39 games. Were you surprised by the scheme tonight? I know it's vanilla. You're trying to get DJ Lagway back into the fold. I was a little disappointed. I don't know what I was expecting, but I guess just the amount of screens again to the receivers for a loss of yards was our biggest concern.
Yeah, and I didn't really get what the purpose, like in a game like this where we're trying to develop the offense and get that rhythm back and DJ shaking rust off. That was what bothered me more than, you know, just in a vacuum calling screen passes. It just didn't seem like that was something that was aimed at helping DJ get the rust knocked off and get better. So that was kind of what bothered me. And you know, this isn't necessarily an offensive qualm, but more so than I was upset with Trace Mack for going 1 for 3 on field goals in the first half. I was upset that we had 3 field goal attempts in the first half. The offense, the entire first half, first 19 minutes of the game, we were getting the ball, you know, at the 40-yard line the entire first half, and you settle for 3 field goals. And I think that clunkiness is what was so frustrating. And then obviously towards the end of the half, we kind of broke through and shook that rust off. But it was just one of those typical Billy Napier offensive experiences where you just feel like everything's clunky, everything's like pulling teeth. And that was what was most disappointing about the offense to me.
Yeah, I think you said it towards the beginning, Devin. You spend 9 months talking about DJ Lagway and the hype there and Jaden Baugh, and you almost forget, you almost trick yourself into thinking, oh, maybe it'll be different. Maybe when we turn on the screen or we sit in that stadium, that offense it's going to look entirely different. Billy Napier's scheme, he's stuck to it. It's not going to look all that different. You got to hope that the players can elevate the scheme and, you know, get the best out of it, but – yeah, there was some clunkiness. It kind of goes to the rust we talked about with DJ. There was a lot of horizontal throws, not as much vertical stuff as you'd like to see. And to Devin's point, in a game like this, you'd kind of hope they would test that a little bit more. And so it's disappointing a little bit, but it's year four. It's kind of something we just have to live with and keep rooting for our Gators nonetheless.
Yeah, it was par for the course. You know, like you said, the screens, the motions and Trey Wilson running around, and ironic, he catches a touchdown and he's running downfield. Try doing that maybe some more. But I kind of mentioned it earlier about like in the how good he was in the empty sets. Like do that more. Like do it earlier. And I get being vanilla and the opponent and everything, but to echo your same points, why not throw a few downfield passes with DJ going into next week?
And I think they did set up a few. Lagway did look a little uncomfortable in the pocket at times. I think one of the first that's two or three point. Drives, he left two clean pockets.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So maybe it was there. You know, it's hard seeing it from a certain viewpoint in the stadium. We'll have to go back and rewatch the game, and obviously you're focused on different things. Watch on the TV, Sam. But that's something to note. But, gotta get Lagway more comfortable. Like we mentioned, he looks sharp at the end of the first half. But I'm going to jump over to our second caller, Charlie.
Yes, this is Charlie Reynolds from Jacksonville, Florida. I got a question for Raymer. Wanted to know his thoughts on Trey Wilson and if there is an amount of cardio he needs to get in per week before he's allowed to score a touchdown. Also, his thoughts on the bubble screen and how we as a team can run that more effectively. And other than that, what his recruiting pitch is to 17 and 8 and how they were able to come to Florida. I know Trammell Jones was committed to FSU and DB3 was kind of on the fence there, but wanted to know if he had any tips or inside information on how those guys got over to University of Florida.
Now bringing up the cardio, that was brought up in the group chat multiple times this evening. It's something that we've seen in the past when Trey Wilson is suited up. I believe he missed 8 or 9 games last year, but he seems like he needs to get all 10,000-15,000 steps, and he waits till he's on the field and just runs orbit motion, these little screens behind the line of scrimmage, and dances around a little bit. Really nothing explosive out of him until that touchdown. Devin, I mean, you got to be sick and tired of seeing this, right? This guy's got yak on the back of his nameplate. And how many yards after catch did he have today?
I couldn't tell you. Trey Wilson is really athletic. I'm just not sure that he's more than a gadget player at this point in his career, which is – not, you know, it's not meant to be derogatory, but I think that until he kind of proves that he's a downfield threat, this is just kind of what he is. He's a really good athlete. He's a guy that you want with the ball in his hands, but I'm not sure where the disconnect comes. But when you see a guy like Vernell Brown come in and immediately make plays down the field and get targeted down the field a bunch, it makes you wonder why Trey Wilson isn't getting targeted. So I don't know what the answer to that question is, and I don't think that those downfield targets are going to get any easier when Mizell's back, when Dallas Wilson's back. So it may just be what Eugene Wilson's role is at this point in his career.
Yeah, and Hunter, watching a guy committed to Florida State last year throughout, I think he committed in his junior year, flips to the Gators, I believe midway through the recruiting process last year. What have you seen with Napier playing young guys, given the opportunity that might have flipped, you know, going from Florida State to Florida and having the opportunity last night to play in the Swamp?
Yeah, I mean, he obviously just came to his senses, right? From Florida State to Florida. I don't know if you need to go too much beyond that, but I mean – tonight would have been a pretty good tape to show those young guys if they're looking for a chance to get out there game one. I mean, we talked about VB3, and then we obviously talked about Jones himself, what he was able to show us tonight in that second half. I mean, he played an entire half of football in his first game suiting up, so that's pretty cool. But, yeah, I mean, Florida State to Florida, I don't know that much has to be said besides that.
As Robert McVall would say, smart decision, young man.
And Sam, I mean, VB3, he was down to LSU, Ohio State, Miami, the Gators. And he is – we heard all offseason, Dallas Wilson's one of those guys that should be wearing an Ohio State jersey at receiver, right, with all the talent Brian Hartline gets. Hell, I'd argue VB3 is as well. I mean, he is just as talented, if not as good as everybody else that's come through that Ohio State pipeline.
Yeah, you can't tell me every team in the country wouldn't want a guy like that. I mean, game one, he's going to be on SportsCenter, you know. So he's going to be very, very fun to watch. And we've already talked about the element with the punt return game. Was he fielding kick returns? I mean, there wasn't really, we only had one of those.
He returned the first one. They were offsides on their lone kickoff attempt of the game for LIU. So we redid it. I think he had a 31 or 32
yard. They're excited, Jackson. They didn't get to do it much. They were pumped
up.
Do
we have a punter?
He punted one time, and I thought it was questionable. I don't think it was the best effort, but when you've been sitting on the sidelines for that long of a period of time, I'm not truly disappointed. I hope we don't see him.
I thought it was 40. It was like 47 yarder, right?
Yeah, my angle looked like 39, 40, but
I'm just going off Delator's tweets. He's the punter guy. I thought it was a 47 yarder. It's not too bad.
Speaking of EW3's cardio, what did you guys think about how DJ looked physically? Did you think that he looked like he was plodding a little bit overweight, maybe? I know that was a little bit of a discussion, you know, him being listed at, 247 going into camp. He had a couple of scrambles where, you know, the guy that had that one cut and go speed against Kentucky last year just didn't look like he was there. And I don't know if it's because of the injuries, he's trying to nurse the calf still, or if it's because of the weight gain this offseason. But did you guys notice that and have any thoughts on that?
I noticed it. I mean, I noticed it in the sense that I could tell he looked a little thicker, but I don't know. I think if nobody would have brought it up as far as the scramble speed, it's not something I would have jumped to immediately. He definitely, you know, yeah, he looked a little bit slower than he might have last year. But like you said, part of that could be nursing an injury and not wanting to run full speed. So, yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on that.
He's got that Chipotle deal now, you know.
That's right.
I think he's got a couple burgers named after him in Gainesville too, so.
Yeah, that's not happening. That's not helping the narrative there, Dev.
Watching on the broadcast, he didn't necessarily look like hobbled or anything. Like, you guys were there in person, so you could see physically if he like looked a little bit bigger. He definitely looks a little bit bigger. I'm not too concerned as like, is he Jamarcus Russell in the NFL overweight? But we're not quite there.
Not
yet.
There yet.
Now, coming back from injury, I don't know how much he's working out. You know, the shoulder and then the calf. So. Maybe a few weeks of being healthy, back in the weight room, running around and practicing and playing. Maybe he can shed a few pounds and get back to looking a little bit more elusive. Any additional thoughts, fellas? 55-0 win. We're going to jump over to around the SEC and around the country.
You have one thing. First time in program history, zero penalties, zero turnovers, 0 points allowed.
Jeez. Look at that.
That's pretty cool.
Good night for the Gators all around.
It's easy to be nitpicky in a game like this. We should also appreciate that we just shut a team out and put up a 50.
Zero penalties. I don't care your opponent. That is impressive. I mean,
I'd like to bring up kind of a side point for the podcast, guys, because we're on week two here doing this podcast together, boys. And you mentioned at the beginning that Sir William is not with us. Zero penalties, 0 points allowed. I mean, that's a lot of discipline. The 1 week Will decides not to show up. And I don't want to put rumors out there for Gator Twitter. I heard you didn't even watch the game. I mean, they're hours ahead over there. You went to sleep. Did you notice that he sent a text before the game? He said, Billy's wearing black. Didn't hear from him after that.
I'm telling you, there were some big soccer matches this morning. He had to get up for it.
Our group
We might need to call the embassy over there in London and make sure Will stays over for the remainder of the football season.
Our group chat was very active, but he was notably absent.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, guys, around the SEC, we had some ball last night with Auburn. Ooh. Big road win for Hugh Freeze and Jackson Arnold in his debut for the Tigers. But the big game, they come to the Swamp in a month. Texas versus Ohio State, Arch Manning, boy, you know, the playing 1A ball in Louisiana, I don't know how well that translates at the quarterback position to big-time football like the SEC. Sam, what did you see at Arch Manning today, and are you concerned at the same level we were maybe a week ago about these Longhorns coming to Texas, coming to Gainesville?
I won't go as far as, like, say that. They're obviously still very talented, but, yeah, he did not look the part. I don't know if – give Ohio State's defense credit. I forgot that Matt Patricia is their defensive coordinator now. That was funny seeing him in college. But maybe they just took away his legs and then made him throw. I mean, he really could not complete the ball downfield. The few passes that he did complete downfield, I'll give him credit, were really good passes. But, yeah, that was quite shocking of a first game. Ohio State, they did what they had to do to win. Their quarterback looked fine. He did what he had to do, took care of the football. And then their next road game, you know, is at the Swamp. So we'll see if that's what Arch looks like, you know, in some tough road environments. This next one is going to be where you guys were last night. So that makes it a little bit – gets you a little, maybe a little bit more excited compared to last week.
He had the look of a guy that's going to get eaten alive by the Swamp.
That Manning face.
The Manning dumb face. He just the arm strength was the thing that stuck out to me the most. Like, you know, you're gonna leave a couple of throws short every now and then, especially, you know, on the road for the first time in a big game for the first time. But just throughout the game, man, he had two really pretty balls. But other than that, the inaccuracy, the unwillingness to step into throws when he was pressured even a little bit, the happy feet, I got the impression that he was a guy that has not faced much adversity through the first, you know, entirety of his football life. And he got smacked in the face with it in the horseshoe. And it looked like that was the first time that he had an experience like that. So I was very impressed with Texas's athletes on defense. I think that they looked the part. They looked good on defense, and you know Sark's a good play caller, so they're still going to be a dangerous team. And three weeks for Arch to figure it out before he comes to the Swamp. But he did not look like a guy that's going to waltz into the Swamp against a Gator defense that just pitched a shutout against LIU. But
Hunter, I'm going to ask you a different question. We obviously didn't get to watch the game. I don't know if you got home in time back to Ocala for the Clemson LSU finish. But obviously half this podcast will be in Death Valley. We got to see Arch Manning lose on the road. We turn around after our game, get to see Garrett Nussmeier go into Death Valley Junior and go on and beat a pretty good Clemson team. So what are your thoughts on the Tigers and Garrett Nussmeier's performance with LSU getting their first season opener win in 6 years, I believe?
Yeah, you know, Sam mentioned the jump scare a little bit with Matt Patricia. I got a jump scare whenever they pan to Nussmeier's dad in the stands, an old friend of the Florida faithful. Not a jump scare in the sense I didn't expect it, but it gave me a laugh. I honestly was not able to catch much of it with the drive back from the game. It did seem like, obviously, a low-scoring defensive battle type of game. Sam may be able to comment more as far as quarterback play, but going into it, I guess it's two Death Valleys, but for him to go on the road and get that win against Clemson is impressive regardless of how it was done. But Sam may be able to comment more on the quarterback play itself.
Yeah, I was tuned in a little bit, like, nothing crazy in terms of like it was honestly very similar to the Texas Ohio State game defensive battle. LSU's defense definitely passed the test. Like, they were making it very hard for Klubnik, and he's a pretty mobile guy, and he did not have a lot of time to move around. So that definitely jumped off the page. Harold Perkins was making some plays, like the name. We all know the name. And they got Patrick Payton from FSU, and I hate to say it, I did hear number 44's name a couple times too. I'm not going to say his name here, but I heard it on the broadcast. And then they got Weeks as well. So their defense looked really good. And they held up a little bit on the offensive line enough to make enough plays to win. So I'll give LSU a lot of credit. I did not foresee Brian Kelly going in there, especially like Raymer said, the opening week struggles that they've had and the ways that they've lost those games. Usually it's by shooting themselves in the foot somehow. So, yeah, 2 weeks from now is going to be ramped up as long as we take care of business next week. I don't know who they play, but I'm sure they'll take care of business. Top 15 matchup under the lights.
Yeah, good point, Sam. And real quick, school out west, they get a big win today over not the Alabama team we grew up watching. They're 5-5, their last 10 games. Quick 10 seconds, guys. I'll start with you, Hunter. Does Kalen DeBoer make it through the season?
I'll go no, just because of the expectations over there. I mean, I still think Alabama will settle in a little bit, but the thing is, at a place like Alabama, you go 9-3, then 9-4 last year, and then 9-3 again. That might be enough at a place like Bama. So I'll go no, but you never know.
Nick Saban's Alabama is dead. And I think all of our dads will tell you that the jaws will be out, the gnashing of teeth that those fans will do at Kalen DeBoer. He'll be an outsider. He doesn't get the culture, everything else that that they can do to get him run out of town quickly. If they go 8-4, 7-5, he is out.
Yeah, I don't think he'll make it through, unfortunately. But we wouldn't be credible if we didn't give the other team in that game a little bit of credit.
And I think
I'm not going to say it, but
It
doesn't matter, but I think they might have killed one of Will's takes right off the bat because he had him looking for a new coach, and they might give him another extension after yesterday. Their quarterback looked good. I'll say his name. Castellanos played pretty well.
He looked well. You got to get props to him. All that, you know, he was talking some smack.
He was talking, and he backed it up. I respect that.
Well, the good news is it looks like DeBoer only got this job because of the Atlanta Falcons' current starting quarterback, Michael Penix. So that gets me excited for next week's season opener against the Buccaneers. So thank you, Michael Penix, for allowing Kalen DeBoer to take this job. Ruin the Alabama we all grew up hating, because I think they're about to endure the next 10 years that we've had. Their next 10 years is probably going to be a lot similar to what we've endured. So happy for those Alabama fans for finally a little bit of misery. But
they deserve it.
Quick recap around the league. Next week, fellas, let's do a quick rundown on USF, who played Thursday night. They had Boise State at home. I think that was a 38-7 victory,
34-7.
All right, split the middle. Brown, he's a really good quarterback, athletic, made some big throws. Their offense resembles that fast-paced Tennessee offense that we've known to hate with Josh Heupel. Devin, what do you see of the Bulls? Do you think they're going to be ranked after beating the 25th-ranked Broncos Thursday night? And what are your expectations?
I hope so. I mean, it's fun having a ranked matchup in the Swamp. Hopefully the number beside their name would grab the guys' attention if they haven't already gotten it from what they did to Boise State the other night. Something interesting about that game that Boise State was really controlling the line of scrimmage and early when it was 7-3. And USF faked a punt. And as soon as they got that momentum, that jolt of momentum, it kind of snowballed on Boise. So to me, defensive line, offensive line, both need to impose their will on those weaker units from USF. Obviously, that quarterback, we're going to have to tackle him. He was a guy that was searching for contact. You got to appreciate a kid that runs the ball the way he was running the ball. Made a couple big throws. I wasn't all that impressed with him throwing the ball, but his legs were something that definitely caught my attention and are something that our defense is going to have to come ready to play, ready to get lined up and kind of prepared the same way that we prepare for Tennessee, which our defense has traditionally handled Tennessee's offense pretty well. So you would think that a less talented version of it from USF would be a prep that we're used to.
Yeah, I mean, I talked a little bit about it last week, just this game being slightly important just to kind of set a tone, and them beating Boise even kind of helps that. And maybe they're riding high and you can even catch them more off guard. And they had a couple, like you mentioned, the quarterback, he was running beast mode, had a couple of those runs, different type of athlete that is going to be tackling them next week. They did have two receivers right at the 100-yard mark, so they have two good receivers. But like you mentioned, the line of scrimmage, Devin Boise had four sacks, so we can hopefully get in the backfield, make the quarterback beat with the arm. But I was looking forward to this game, and it's going to have maybe a little bit more intriguing. And to the point of the other Florida school winning and USF winning, our already tough schedule got tougher in 1 week. Miami still has to play tonight, but nobody on our schedule lost week one. That's pretty crazy.
Tennessee, they handled Syracuse. Syracuse did some of the dumbest things you'll ever see on a football field to assist in losing that game. And Tennessee's always good to blow out a middle tier non-conference opponent early in the season. But that's another team that I think Aguilar looked better than I would have liked for him to look. So that's another team on the schedule that we get to look forward to playing later on in the year.
Yeah, and so with that, I think it'd be fun to go around the horn if everyone wants to give a little USF score prediction. It could be a fun little segment each week, see if someone can get it right on the nose. So I'll start. I think the Gators take care of business. I can see it being a close game at halftime and then us pulling away. I'll go 34-21 Gators.
Yeah, I'll lean towards 31-13. I think Brown, I believe our front seven will be – do a better job containing him, not let him have those hero runs that he showed last Thursday night. And the Gators do just enough offensively that we feel okay going into Death Valley.
I got 34-17. That just seems like a Florida USF score.
Yeah, I was thinking 38-14. I think that they have a talented quarterback that'll make big plays, but I do think that our defense is suffocating and going to be prepared for the gimmicky offense, the unethical football that we're going to see in the Swamp on Saturday night. And we got to keep crossed that Will is going to watch the game. He might be in Brussels. He might be in Australia. We don't know if he'll catch next week's game. So audience, stay tuned for if Will even knows that we play USF next week.
Yeah. What do you guys think the spread's going to be?
13.5?
Oh, I'm going to say 11.5.
Right around that 2-touchdown mark.
Yeah. In the 10-14 range would be my guess.
Yeah. Well, thanks, guys, for tuning in to our second episode of Breakfast with the Gators, a proud member of the Stadium and Gale Network. Finally, our first recap show. Football is here. You can follow and like us on YouTube and Twitter at BreakfastWTG. Guys, our phone line to call in after games is listed both in our bio on YouTube and Twitter. So come on, bring us your thoughts. We'd love to react and address whatever questions or what you thought you saw that stuck out. So thank you again for joining. We'll catch you next Sunday morning for another edition of Breakfast with the Gators.